Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We're coming to you live from the Noble Gold Studios. We are freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Speaking of Noble Gold, hey, listen, the banks are, well, there's two banks that have failed and the people can't get their money. Do you need any more emphasis on my warnings to you? Okay, listen, just call Noble Gold and say, hey, look, I want to protect my retirement. I want to protect my savings. And I want to invest in gold and silver because they're kicking butt right now. Okay, listen, no question. Go to your phone after this broadcast and call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Noble Gold, proud sponsor of the Common Sense Show. Got to give you a warning here. Hey, there's no guarantees. This is from the federal government. We agree, but I have also been an advertiser for 8.5 years and a customer many times over 7.5 years. People, don't let the banks take your money, and it's coming. Our guest is Paul Preston, and this interview is impromptu. For the most part, because I called Paul today when I was on my way to my annual eye exam. And I said, Paul, man, I see that Milei from Argentina has released files that Hitler actually lived in Argentina for 20 years and had two kids. And I'm thinking, man, this is amazing. And I knew Paul was the guy to call on this because he knows more than this about anybody else. Peter Levenda has written a book. Paul knew him really well. This is going to be interesting. What really happened to Adolf? Paul, good to have you on. Usually we're talking about New California. And so before we start, how are things going with New California?
Things are progressing very well with the new California state movement. We're going to be going to convention here in the end of this month, next month, 25th and 26th. And then before that, we're going to be meeting in seclusion about the Constitution and finalizing the Constitution. So we're pretty excited about that. We're getting very close to the end for that and opening up another chapter, which will mean that we're going to be going with the president. We think in very short order because the imminent collapse, as you're probably hearing, a financial collapse of California, that it's very, very near. And they know it, we know it. And, it's a matter of executing the proper steps for statehood just as this collapse gets it going. It's going to affect, of course, the whole nation, the whole world. It's going to be a very deep collapse. And this is just, the warm-up before statehood, basically.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm just stunned at the progress that you've made in recent days. It's just incredible. Your convention, I haven't checked my calendar. Is this open to the public?
The convention on the end of the year or the end of the month is absolutely open to the public. The other one is not. It's we're going to be sequestered actually for about 2 days. No one can come in. No one can go out. All cell phones are, confiscated type of thing, and no conversations outside the buildings. So it's going to be one of those kind of things. It's going to be, you have to do it because, you never know what's going to happen about people trying to disrupt the process of the Constitution.
You need anyone from the press to cover your convention?
Yeah, sure, Dave. You're more than welcome to show up there. We have invited the president. We've also invited Pam Biondi and also Kash Patel. So you never know. Then, the last time I invited the president to something, he actually said yes. And that was the Coachella Valley thing out here in California. Over 200,000 people showed up. Unfortunately, we could not come up with the financial means to support it. And it had to default, if you will, to the California Republican Party, which they had nothing to do with bringing him out. Trust me, they had
Wow.
nothing to do. They were not going to invite him out. We were the only ones in the 2024 election to invite Donald J. Trump out for a rally in California. New California was.
Well, we know the GOP in California is controlled by bad guys. We know that.
Yes, well, they very yeah. Everybody in California is, when you take a look at what's going on in California state, we're a monoparty system, a monoparty state, a one-party state. You've got 120 members of the California state legislature, 80 assembly members, and 40 senators. And of the 80 assembly members, 17 are Republican. And of the senators, you have 40, you have seven that are Republican. And of the 52 seats in Congress, only seven are Republican. So we are defined as a one-party state, just exactly like all the other one-party states of the world, such as North Korea, such as communist China, such as Cuba, such as Venezuela. Then, of course, the former Adolf Hitler Nazi Germany, and Soviet Union. Now there's California.
Well,
California it joins that illustrious group.
Commie-fornia. Well,
Well, I don't say it so much commie. It's going to really, I think, kind of bust a big move here on this show today. It's more Nazi. This is a Nazi takeover of California. This is not a communist. If you wanted to, I think that communism and Nazism are the same, two sides of the same coin.
I totally agree.
But the way in which communists behave is somewhat altered from Nazis. This is all Nazism out here. It's a Nazi-esque
Okay.
takeover.
Thank
It's got all the signs and symptoms of it.
you. You took the words right out of my mouth when I said two sides of the same coin. I was going to blurt that out when you just ripped that out of my mouth and said that, but you're absolutely right. Well, I remember when I came out for an earlier convention that you guys had in California for New California. My wife and I came out. We had the time of our life. You had a great guest there, the former governor of Arkansas. I love that guy. And I love his daughter too. I mean, they are fantastic. They truly are. I love
Mike
those.
Huckabee.
Yeah, Mike and his daughter, they are awesome. They're great Americans. And we need more of them. You know, if Trump had not been the nominee in 2016, I told the governor after I interviewed him, I said, you know, I wish it would have been you. If it hadn't been Trump, I wish it had been you. He had been a damn good president.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And you saw at the convention when I was standing up there speaking, I was chiding him because I wanted him to be the governor of New California. And I sincerely meant it. Every time I got I could get him up in front of people, and I'd hit him with that. And
Remember?
I don't know if it made any he was I don't know if it made any difference with him, but he was very impressed at that whole turnout. And I think everybody just loved the heck out of him, his presentation and everything. It hit home. It was very heartfelt for New Californians sitting in that audience. It was a great experience.
Yeah, we were all sitting at the lunch table together, and after I interviewed him, first of all, the guy was so generous with his time, and I thanked him for that. And I said, Governor, thanks for being so generous. He goes, your heart's in the right place. I heard you talking to the table. And he said that basically that's why he did what he did. He is just a real down-to-earth, genuine guy. And I see what he's advertising on Fox now. It's really interesting. It's like political stuff for kids, open
Right.
stuff, you know, raising kids the right way, not trying to cut
Shocking.
their genitals off. So yeah, it was, but the convention was fantastic when I was there. And this is at the end of April, correct?
Correct. It'll be April 25th and 26th. It's going to be in Fresno, California. We already have the locations picked out. I can't give you a lot of details because of security reasons. It's going to be it'll be a solid 2 days. It'll be a solid 2 days. There'll be the reorganized government of California part of the time will be taken up with that, and the rest of it will be for New California.
Well, we're going to do a show as the event gets closer. We're going to focus strictly on New California. But right now, I want to go to this news that prompted me to call you impromptu. I'm driving down Interstate 17 in Phoenix on the way to my appointment, and I heard this little news blurb, but I go, oh, but I know the guy to call. So you got my call. Malay came out today, as I said, and said that Hitler lived there for 20 years and he did escape, and we got the paperwork, and he had two kids. Okay, let's dissect this, Paul.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I don't believe Hitler lived there for 20 years because of his involvement in Malaysia.
That's true. He did not live there 20 years. And as you know, Dave, I had a pretty extensive history in terms of studying Hitler, the collapse of communism in particular. And I actually went to the Fuhrer bunker in 1992 to do research in Berlin. And I spent several days in Berlin. And East Berlin and West Berlin at the time, because it's clearly was still divided, even though the West German government was really moving very quickly to unify. But there was still the wall was still up in many places, many places that had been taken down and removed. And actually, they had actually taken down portions of the wall and partitioned it off so you had no access to get out into what was then known as the no man's land between East and West Berlin.
Yeah.
And that right just maybe a quarter mile down, I think it's probably a southwest down from the Brandenburg Gate out in the middle of no man's land is where the Fuhrer bunker was located. And the remains of it was still there, but not much. But anyway, I couldn't find it. In fact, it was kind of interesting because they had the wall up, and in plenty of places the wall was up like it was. And then all of a sudden it was taken apart and moved around. Finally, I squeezed between two pieces of the Berlin Wall and came out onto the no man's land. And I looked straight ahead, and there was a guy standing there. He had a white hat and black t-shirt on, and he was on a mound, somewhat of a mound, with some pieces of granite around it. And so I followed a trail. And keep in mind, we're in the middle of Berlin. We're in the middle of no man's land. And of course, no man's land was a bombed out relic from World War II. So there was still live ordnances in the ground everywhere. My landmines left over from the East Germans trying to prevent the Germans from the East Germans from coming across to the West. All things like that. So you had to walk between the tapes on the ground. As of walking along between the tapes on the ground, you could see it wasn't dirt. It was just the litter of the ruins of Berlin. It was just really disturbing. But I walked up to this guy, and it turned out to be Christoph Neubauer. That's who I was asked tasked to go and find in my search in the discovery about the collapse of Germany, collapse of East Berlin or East Europe. And so when I went to the Olympic Games in 92, and there I met a man by the name of Roger Thoreau, who was a member of the Eastern European correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. And he gave me two big tips at the time. He said, if you want to find out about the collapse of communism in Europe, then you need to go to two places, the Church of Saint Nikolai in Leipzig, Germany. Go back, and I was already there once and didn't find anything. And he said, go back and talk to a guy by the name of Friedrich Mercurius and find out about the Monday night masses, and then go to the Berlin Wall and look up a guy by the name of Christoph Neubauer. And so I said, okay, I'll do that. So I did it,
How do you spell
and
Neubauer's last name? Paul, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Neubauer, it's Neubauer, Neubehouer.
Okay, I've seen that name
I
before.
think that's pretty close. I have some photographs. I can show you what the guy looks like.
Okay.
But anyway, so I found where the Führerbunker was, and it was just really by happenstance and God's good grace that I popped out at the place where I did. I literally popped out between, because I was, it was a very small gap I had to go through, but I made it. And when I walked out there, I walked up to him, and I found that he was on in front of him. I'll put this out here. In front of him, you can see this picture. I probably should have sent it to you before. I don't know how it's going to hold
Oh,
up,
that's
but
okay. Yeah. Well,
there was this book or booklets in a briefcase,
got
and
it.
he was had a whole bunch of paraphernalia. And I thought, oh great, he's a Nazi, last and but because the Nazis back then were verboten. You didn't talk about Nazis, you didn't know
Yeah.
about Nazis, nothing about Nazis in 1992,
It was
and
outlawed, wasn't it? Wasn't it outlawed?
it was outlawed. Everything about it was outlawed. And so any kind of symbolism, anything just was not going to happen. So he has this open briefcase with all this stuff, two of them actually. And I look at him and I said, I'm here from Roger Thoreau of the Wall Street Journal. And he goes, oh, and we start the conversation about Hitler. And I said to myself, I said to him, I said, well, what do you do here? I said, are you the guard of the bunker or what? And I said, this is the bunker. He goes, yeah, this is the exit to the bunker, where they exited it out right here. And I said, so what do you do? And he said, well, what I am is a historical preservationist. And I said, well, okay, well, what does that mean for this? And he said, I'm trying to save the bunker, the Führerbunker, from destruction by the West German government. He says, look around. They're destroying everything that was already destroyed, because after World War II, the Soviets did not allow the East Germans or Eastern anybody to rebuild. They left everything in a state of bombed out disrepair. All that was the way it was all around East Germany at the time. And so the West Germans were rushing like crazy to knock down the old and bring in some of the new. And they succeeded, obviously, but it took many, many years to rebuild. And even some places that I understand in Eastern Europe, it's still run down like it was after World War II with all the ruins. So it started the conversation about Hitler and the whole Third Reich and everything. And we sat there for a good 3 hours, and several people walked up. As you can see, this is a picture of him. as I was talking to him.
Let me describe this for our audience only. We're looking at the pictures that Paul's talking about here, and yeah, the principles are there. So Paul, keep in mind here, this will go out on our TV and our podcast.
And anyway, so he and I exchanged a lot of stuff, and it was just a treasure trove of understanding what brought Hitler to power, the whole nine yards. And it was pretty amazing. And I said, so where did they find, this is the belief system that I was under at the time, is that Hitler had not escaped the bunker. He died within the bunker itself. And I said, so where did, where was his body found in relationship to this position here? And he pointed over to a stack and pack high rises. No joke. You can't make it up. A Soviet style stack and pack high rise building. He says, his body is supposed to have been found over there in the playground area. That's where it's supposed to have been. I said, oh, okay. So he said, but he didn't, he escaped. His body wasn't burned over there. And I then that conversation, I said, what do you mean he escaped? Now, keep in mind, I'm in the mindset, and everybody was in the mindset, that he did not escape the bunker. He died in the bunker. And he said, well, he got out, and he got out days before the fall of Berlin, and he made it through, and he flew out on the Unter der Linden street. He didn't go through the airport and all this stuff. And he starts talking about it as if it's like fact, you know. And I'm sitting here thinking, now, well, this conversation's gone over 3 hours, and I'm now finding out this, that he didn't die in the bunker. And I'm thinking, I really stepped in it this time, because now he's talking about, you know, he didn't die. He flew off and did this stuff. And I'm thinking, how crazy is that, right? 1992 thinking, because everybody on the planet thought and knew that Hitler died in the bunker, right?
Yeah.
At that time.
That's
and
what I
so,
was taught.
And so I left and I went over and looked at the playground area that they said. I took pictures and all that stuff. And I kept on thinking about it, you know. And so I decided right then, I said, I'm going to walk every spot in Berlin today, because I had time. So I walked until probably midnight throughout Berlin to every spot he had mentioned about Berlin. And I said to myself at the end of that, I said, this guy probably did get out. And then I started thinking about it. And but after time, I just added it to a lot of the other information as to the rationale of the collapse of communism and how people got out, how people survived and things like that. And I kind of stuck to that part of my story and my notes and everything. And I've got all my notes that I made from that day. It was August 3rd, 1992, when I talked to him. And so I decided, well, okay, that's great. So I think it was about 2010. I'm in the studio like I'm in right now, and I was working. It was about 1:30, 1:40 in the morning, and George Norrie's in the background playing, and there's a guy talking, and every once in a while he mentions Nazis. Well, you know, they mention Nazis on George Norrie all the time, you know, and he mentions this, and I keep on hearing Nazis. So finally, at about a quarter till, I go to bed, and I'm laying down in bed, and I'm listening, and I'm going, the guy mentions Hitler survived the bunker, and this, that, and the other. And then I sat up and I said to myself, this guy is talking about exactly what I know. And I said, there's probably only three or four people on the planet who know this. And so I called KFI radio. I called KFI radio that right then. And I said, I need to talk to Peter Lavenda, who you're interviewing right now.
Okay.
I need to talk to him right now. And so he called me back. So from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we talked on the phone, and it was like deja vu all over again. And all this, everything that Christoph Neubauer was talking about was coming alive with his book called The Rat Line. And he described how Adolf Hitler escaped the bunker almost like word for word verbatim from what, you know, Christoph Neubauer had told me in 1992. And so we are going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I was relating things that I had done here in my country in the United States at the time, all during the 60s, 70s, and 80s and 90s in education. You could see the influence of Nazism coming along, because you had a whole lot of Nazi things that were happening with the kids, even at the secondary level. You really start to see it. And so within curriculums and, I mean, everything. We were having a lot of kids that were trying to interfere with school activities and so on that were being neo-Nazis at the time. You had the communists, of course, through La Raza and Mecha and things like that that were trying to interrupt and be a part of the school and be disruptive and carry the Nazi and communist banners. And to me, all of a sudden, as I realized with the collapse of communism and how communism collapsed, I understood that my involvement with Janet Evans, the Olympic gold medalist, and when she was in 1988 Olympics, and we witnessed literally the collapse of the East German government when she won 3 gold medals in Seoul, Korea, absolutely crushed the hearts and minds and souls of people in East Germany when she got 3 gold medals over the East Germans, which was just a political heyday after that. I was responsible for her well-being as a school administrator at El Dorado High School in Placentia at the time. And for the next year, we really did witness and we heard about the events of what was happening in East Europe. And then by November 9th, 1989, the wall finally came down. And all of our kids, we all knew what was going on. We all understood it, that we had had some impact with that. And so that's what prompted me to go to Germany to begin with, what caused the collapse of communism. And it was a spiritual ending to it, to the collapse of communism. That's, of course, what happened with the Church of Saint Nikolai. That's another story. But Christoph Neubauer worked on a project, and Peter Lavenda knew about the project. But the Hunting Hitler series that came out was based in part by what Christoph Neubauer had researched about how Adolf Hitler actually survived the bunker. And in that series, they explain how he got out of Germany and went to Portugal, Spain, and Portugal, and from there Argentina. And he reestablished himself. And understand that I believe that this part of the escape was all part of a grand plan to ultimately dominate the world. And I think that this is 1945. The war is coming to an end. Adolf Hitler has escaped, and he had a complete plan laid out for his escape. When he escaped, he had houses that were already built for him in Argentina, already set up and ready to go. He had fortified encampments that were already set up and ready to go to protect him. The Nazis had everything completely planned out after
Let me
World
ask
War
you,
II.
who is protecting Hitler?
Primarily, the Argentinian, of course, the president Perón,
Perón, yeah, Juan Perón,
he was
right.
giving him cover, right? And the Argentines there's have a lot of Germans. People don't realize that in America that America and the Western Hemisphere is made up primarily of immigrants from all around the world. So it shouldn't be a surprise that we have German enclaves in places that appeal to the Germans, like the Andes, which appeals to them like the Alps would. And of course, Argentina is just rich with mountains and the land and the lay of the land and everything is very similar to parts of Germany. So they settled in there. Immigrants did. They settled into Mexico and many parts of the Central America. So the Nazi influence in the Western Hemisphere was strong during World War II. Mexico gave us real problems, not only in World War I by siding with Germany, primarily because of its German influence of native Germans that had immigrated, just like you had the English and the Europeans immigrate to immigrate to the United States and create the 13 colonies. Then World War II happened, and of course there was a lot of concern. The Nazis were very much embedded in working strongly alongside the Mexican government, and that was a big problem for America. So when he was down there, he was planning another attack and a raid on the United States, and some of it included the construction of a nuclear bomb. They were very much far along in the production of a nuclear bomb. All of this is archived in the series Hunting Hitler, and I say, from what I've researched and known, the vast majority of that program and how Hitler escaped to Argentina, what he did in Argentina, and also in other countries there in Colombia, his influence was huge, and there absolutely was planning something for the United States to take it over and destroy it. He also made many ventures, we are finding out now, to the United States, and particularly places like Los Angeles. There was quite a large Nazi contingent in Los Angeles that was supported primarily economically through child sex trafficking. This is what's been realized now, some add-ons to this. And of course, that started to really pop out in the 50s and in the 60s and 70s. And a couple of the big kingpins behind the child sex trafficking in Los Angeles, Southern California, and California, even up here where I live, we're still influenced by much of it. But the Nazis really had an enclave out of Los Angeles. It's believed Hitler actually spent much time in Los Angeles, actually, and child sex trafficking was a big part of it. And one of the things that they really opened up with was the use of the MK Ultra program, where children were actually sold by elite parents to the MK Ultra program, and that these MK Ultra programs were schooled in MK Ultra dialogue, monologues, education. Now, where did they get that from? They got it from people like, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? Edmund G. Brown Jr.
From California.
from Cal, the governor of California,
Yeah.
and Alan Cranston, the senator of California. He actually is the one who translated Mein Kampf. And there's two varieties of the book called Mein Kampf. There's the thin variety that everybody gets and buys in the Middle East, which is still the number one selling book in the Middle East. And then there's a thick version that there's a couple of versions of them. And that's the version that Alan Cranston would read to the kids to brainwash them.
Interesting.
But
I
that was
gotta.
only part of what their horrors were going on, because what they were doing were selling these kids, and they were using them as sex slaves and so on. They were also using them for rituals and that sort of thing. We talk about in the child sex trafficking business here in California, we talk about these the way the kids are trafficked and when they come to the border. And this is all documented. I mean, this has been, they've had hearings on this. The Grassley hearings are a classic example, but they get sorted out by whether or not they're going to be used for child sex trafficking, for foster care, or for organ transplants. And now, organ transplants were usually used for sacrifices and sacrificial things that the MK Ultra folks were doing. That would be Alan Cranston and Edmund G. Brown. They were known to be roaming around in Northern California, where I'm at, and even in the 50s, were using some of the children from this area in and around for rituals around the Oroville Dam. Now that's a little strange now, isn't it? But it's not strange. It's very
No,
true.
not with the plant
William
collapse
Randolph
on it.
Hearst William Randolph Hearst has an old hunting lodge up here, not too far. It's called in a little town
I've
called
got it.
Palermo.
Oh, I got
Now,
to
they
go.
didn't use it for hunting animals. They used it for hunting kids. And
Yeah,
that's
no,
very
I
well known
hear
in
you.
this area. People speak of it often.
I've heard those stories, but I got to interrupt you to ask you. I want to go back to something you said. It is true. Mein Kampf is the most popular selling book in the Middle East. And I just want to point one thing out here. This isn't just California. Mein Kampf, Malik Obama, the Muslim Brotherhood created by the Nazis, half brother to Barack Obama, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood Arms Procurement and Finance. They got their man in when Obama got elected, didn't they?
They did, yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it took a long time to get their man in. He was Indonesian, and of course, this comes to a little bit of a story that Obama was Indonesian. Yeah, that therein lies another puzzle piece. But I want to finish up on the MK Ultra, because MK Ultra stands for Mein Kampf Ultra.
You know, my dad worked with Nazi collaborating scientists on paperclip. They didn't call it that when my dad was working in it, but they had numbers for the project. But yeah, this is interesting. He didn't do the, trying to think, the brainwashing aspect of, he was into theoretical physics.
Right.
But later on, when he got out and they keep their communications going with their former colleagues, he found out all about what you're talking about right here. He told me about this.
Well, the whole idea of the MK Ultra program with children, we've had several of the adults now that have been that were MK Ultra'd on my radio show. We've been doing a thing on child sex trafficking, and we started with this one. And many of them were a part of the Los Angeles MK Ultra programs. And of course, one of them, Miss Ingalls, medical doctor. She's now in her 60s, 70s. And she was sold when she was 6 years old by her parents, who were elites in Beverly Hills at the time in the mid 50s. And she was trafficked, and she would spend a lot of time during the summer times in Mexico being sexually assaulted and abused on a daily basis, being propagandized to by Alan Cranston, Jerry Brown Jr., or Jerry Brown, Alan, the son of Edmund G. Brown, and the governor of California for 16 years, was down there as well. So they're all these people are very much implicated in this. One of the big things in Los Angeles, though, when she was up there, were the making of compromising films for politicians. The whole thing was to compromise every politician they possibly could in any way, shape, or form, and that way the politician would always say and do what they wanted him to do. And most of that was in part with drugging them and putting them in compromising positions with children, and even showing them how they killed children. And children would be murdered and then laid over the bodies of a drunken politician and stuff like that to be compromised. She said that Mexican children, as they called them, Mexicans, if they were brown skinned, they had to be brown skinned, then they were brought in by the dozens from Mexico and Guatemala in particular, brought in for sacrifices. And some of these sacrifices would include organ sacrifice, but it would also include snuff pornography movies in which the children were ultimately killed. And she talks about this because she said that for years she thought, because they gave her guns, and the idea was that put the kids there to be killed in the center of a ring, and the perimeter would have the kids that would have toy guns. She didn't realize, she thought they were real guns. And all of a sudden, the kids would be shot, and she would be pulling a trigger. But she realized that when she actually got a gun, and later on in life, it was a toy gun and not a real gun, and the gunfire was coming from behind. But that was the way they'd made snuff movies back then. Now, a lot of these movies were made in places like Laurel Canyon, Topanga Canyon, places in Hollywood. And she said that really what she believes these LA fires has been all about is that they're getting rid of evidence. They're getting rid of the tunnels, the dumps, all these other things, because there's so many places around there where Hitler had such an influence, where these things actually existed. They don't want these things to be found out now. Now, I went down there, as you know, Liz Ritchie and myself and several other people went down, and we did research on the fires there in Malibu. It's clearly a directed energy weapon. It's obvious. Anybody who's ever been around directed energy weapon fires understands it's all electric. It's all about electricity and burning things at anywhere from 4 to 6,000 degrees. So there's a lot of skeletons in the ground, a lot of skeletons in the ground, and that's one of the things that they would definitely be incinerated and destroyed.
I'm just dumbstruck here by the pervasive catch on. But are you saying that child sex trafficking in this country involving Brown and others, it's Nazi oriented, it was Nazi by origin?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Wow.
And of course, and the thing about Adolf Hitler was that Adolf Hitler did survive, and in the movie they portray it. They do an excellent job of portraying in the movie what was happening to Adolf Hitler in South America. Excellent. I can't say enough about it. There's one portion in the movie that taps into my family actually, and something involving one of my ex-family members. It is absolutely uncanny the way it turns out. But so it's like, wait a minute, this is getting too tight for me. But these things are tight for everybody because it's influenced everybody on the planet. But in the Hunting Hitler series, Hitler does not die in Argentina. No, he goes on, and he from about 1954, 55, he goes on to Indonesia. Now, this has become controversial because in the movie they say he dies in Argentina. That did not happen. In fact, in the movie, it's sort of a pregnant pause in the movie, and it doesn't quite jive with the rest of the movie. So what they did is they cut it off at a certain point, really, I think in production, said enough of the Nazis, and now we're at the point where he's going to go to Colombia. What happens? He disappears. He goes to Colombia, he disappears because he ends up in Indonesia. And what does he do in Indonesia? He poses as a Dr. Poch, Poch. This is all from Peter Levenda's book called The Rat Line. I suggest people get it before it's sold out again. But The Rat Line talks about how the Catholic Church got all the Nazis and all the German soldiers out of Germany after World War II, and they became the worldwide diaspora to set up the Fourth Reich. And that was the Catholic Church's involvement. And they're still involved. The Catholic Charities, hello, because the invasion could not have happened without the Catholic Charities run by the Jesuits.
You already took away my next question. That's exactly where I was going to go with this. So when we look at Catholic Charities and the invasion of the United States with illegal aliens and also terrorists who are illegal aliens,
Right.
this is Nazi-oriented, fermented by the Catholic Church. Am I on the right track?
Correct. Correct.
You know, Jim
Not all
Marx.
Catholics are this way, by the way. My family's part Catholic, and no, and I don't know one. I don't
I
know a
hear you.
Catholic who
Yeah, mine
supports
too.
this.
Mine too, Paul. My
Yeah.
niece, nephew, you know, my late sister, late brother-in-law, they same thing. They were Catholic, but they sure weren't like this.
No,
And
and
we
I'm not accusing it. So that people say it's evil against the Catholic. I'm against evil. And if I don't care if it's any church, if the Methodists are doing this also. I mean, you also have the Jewish people, the Hebrews are doing this. Everybody's in on this money, but it happens to be the largest provider of the organization behind the network that's bringing all these people in, happens to be Catholic Charities. Hello. But
there
that's been
we
their
go.
network, and it was the Catholics that brought out and used the cathedrals, used the network all around the world. There's already a worldwide government and religion, and that's the Catholic Church. They just used that bureaucracy to get these Germans out. It became the new diaspora, and they always said that in German that when Adolf Hitler died, that the following January 1st would be the first year of the Fourth Reich. And that January 1st was 1971. So before 1971, he was actively involved in the overthrow of the Indonesian government in the 1950s. His base of operations was from Bali. And he was working with another person, a Japanese by the name of Ryoshi Sasakara, who was in part responsible for the rape of Nanking and also gathering gold and the plunder, if you will, of the Silk Road, in which all that gold that he had, he caught, he ca he that he captured, he of course put it in many different places in the Philippine Islands, and you probably heard about that gold,
Yeah,
R
Paul, I got to bring this up.
Ryoshi
I got to bring this up. Okay. I don't want to go down this road, but I got to mention it. As you know, people like Sarah Westall, myself, and many others are pursuing what we believe is true, that in the old continent of Mu, before it sunk, in the Philippines area, and also into Asia and the South China Sea and Yonaguni underground pyramids, underwater pyramids near Okinawa. In between Okinawa and Japan, all that together speaks to massive gold there and some gold being stored in the Philippines. This is what I want to ask you. Was Hitler in Indonesia to get control of this ancient gold that's voluminous that's being sought today?
Well, what Adolf Hitler also brought was the gold from the Second World War out of Germany. So Indonesia is the storage of that gold. They have possession of that gold. And Adolf Hitler converted to Islam. But those of you that don't know, Adolf Hitler was tight with Islam to begin with. Adolf Hitler helped to create the Muslim Brotherhood with
Right.
Albano
Correct.
in 1928. 1928. And then in the 30s, you had a little country called Persia, which decided to at one point to change its name to Iran. And Iran means Caucasian. Get it?
I got it. I
And
got it.
it was Hitler's influence in Iran that caused that to happen. So, and of course, he had multitudes of people in the Balkans, of men, divisions of Nazi Muslims that were detached as military people to fight the Allies,
Okay.
and that was not unusual. I mean, that was the order of the day.
I
But
got
to
you.
get back to the point for about Indonesia, is that today the gold that's there in Indonesia is operating the worldwide global defeat of America. That's what's happening, and that's identified by, again, Peter Levenda, in his most recent book, The Hitler Legacy. It's verbatim. He gets into all kinds of weird things, like the assassination of Kennedy and how Hitler had a hand in that. It's this is the stuff that's coming out now. It's almost like old news to me, but it's not old news to everybody. And people have been calling me a nutcase wacko and all that. Well, I don't care. I've been there. I've been to these places. Call me a nutcase wacko. But there I am. This is the picture of me in Berlin, the Berlin Wall. That's that crack that I actually crawled through. So, you know how this works, Dave.
I do, but Paul, I got to ask you this question. I hear what you're saying about taking the German gold there to Indonesia. I got it. But did it combine with gold that was there previously and is very ancient?
I'm not sure about the ancient gold. I'm sure about the gold from Sasakawa. That gold was actually used to free him. Sasakawa was tried after World War II to be a war criminal in Japan. He was given a long sentence, and he was actually saved and spared by the CIA, who gave he gave the CIA $200 million worth of gold, and that really propped up the CIA into action post-war of World War II, because remember, the CIA was formed by the Dulles brothers after World War II, and that prompted Operation Paperclip. Without that
Interesting.
money, Operation Paperclip wouldn't have happened.
Go back to kind of looking at a 30,000 foot view of what we talked about. The late Jim Mars and my father had a similar conclusion. I'll start with my father. He had a fit that Wernher von Braun was put in charge of NASA. He said he killed innocent civilians with his two-stage rockets, the V2
Right.
rockets. And my dad said he knew the Nazis were influencing the CIA. And in fact, when he was working with the captured German scientists, he became, I don't know what you call it, a unit commander or a leader of what they were doing. And he would even take the Germans off site because they knew they were being spied on by the CIA. It was absolutely amazing, the story. Now, Jim Mars actually wrote a book, The Fourth Reich, and he said that the Germans may have lost World War II, but they really won the overall war
Right.
because they were dominating America. Do you agree with Jim's premise?
I do. Absolutely. You had Nazis moving around like Adolf Hitler all around the Western United States in California. He was in parts of the Sierra Nevada a lot, and also the Rockies. So, and again, one of the things that happened in the takeover of Operation Paperclip, and Annie Jacobson's book right here. I hold this up because this has become now a topic, and this is my third version of the book, and I've given it, the other two have disappeared. We're all marked up. The other book that's, of course, important right now to understand is this one, and this is The Hitler Legacy by Levenda. And you can see I've got all kinds of stuff on this. But the Hitler Legacy, but you're right. Operation Paperclip wasn't just about, military. It was also about getting and making sure that the Nazis were embedded into every bureaucracy that we had. And then at a certain point, these bureaucracies were weaponized, and that was under Obama. And that was the triggering for the takeover of the United States. I mean, it was a slow movement. It's been going on for a long time, but these people have been working at it. One of the greatest examples of the actions of this was in 19 well, we had the Clive and Bundy situation, where the Bureau of Land Management is a Nazi extension. They're not supposed to seize people's land, but the federal government's not supposed to own land. Get it?
I
But
got you.
they own a lot of land because they've been seizing people's land under very extreme conditions. And right now, you're watching all these DEW fires, like in Paradise, like in Maui, like in Shasta, like in Santa Rosa, like in Los Angeles,
Lahaina.
many places. These places are all, this is all designed to get the people out of the residences in any ruralized area and seize that property for the government. That's what they're trying to do. And this is all an operation conducted by the Operation Paperclip folks who infiltrated the Park Service, the Department of Interior, and all these agencies in which they can take land. And there's a lot of places that people around here in this area even said, "Oh, we even spotted and knew that Adolf Hitler had been around in the area of Northern California around the Oroville Dam area." And I believe him. I believe him. I lived up in that area. I came to believe that this is something that could have happened. And then when I came to understand Peter Lavenda more, and we had a long interview, I totally saw what was going on. And it hasn't the game plan, the war plan is in full action right now. Here's part of their problem. They've executed their plan too soon. I've said this before. They're off their cycle for taking over the United States. They're blundering. They're doing a lot of mistakes. And China is not necessarily in a place where they can really help them a lot. And they wanted to have China's help with all this. That's kind of seemed to have fallen through. So they're going to have to go it on their own, the Nazis that are here in this country. But it's at some point in time, we're going to identify all these guys. All the church figures that have been supporting this. And it doesn't matter now, especially with we have not just the Jesuits, and we don't have just the other church orders. We've got a bunch of them all together that are cooperating to help with this takeover, and the law is going to be applied to them equally. And Donald Trump is the interrupter. He's clearly the interrupter. That's why they had to kill him.
This is what I need to ask you about. Listen, what you're saying, I've heard enough from my own father, from Jim Marr's research, and I was pretty close with Jim. What you're saying here makes perfect sense, and it's really chronological. Trump has to know he's really fighting against the Fourth Reich of the Nazis. Deep
He
state.
does.
The deep state is the Fourth Reich. Am I correct or not?
That's correct. The deep state is the Fourth Reich.
Holy, bleep that out, but unbelievable. I need to
Well,
ask you
it's
another
a.
question. It
Go
came
ahead.
up in our pre-air discussion this afternoon. The pre-air discussion, you said, well, you commented on this. Milei from Argentina said Hitler had two kids when he was in Argentina. You want to link that back to California's former governor?
Well, yeah, the situation with Operation Paperclip and all this other stuff and MK Ultra came up, and it's really implicated in a big way Edmund G. Brown as one of the major forces in the MK Ultra plan, and of course he was the governor, but he was also an advisor to the Indonesian government at the time of the collapse of the Indonesian government, caused in part by Hitler. Who basically remember it was a Royal Dutch operation in Indonesia at the time, wanted to, of course, to convert that. He said his fight was against communism at the time, and so he recruited Ryoshi Sasakawa, who was very, very rich. By the way, Ryoshi Sasakawa left a massive amount of money behind to help start the United Nations, just to let you know, and some in the World Health
So he
Organization
was
in
tied to the
particular.
Rockefellers because they're the ones that gave the land.
Right. So this was all part of that action. And but Edmund G. Brown came along, and he was one of the financial advisors for the Indonesian government as they rebuilt after the coup. And so he was given as payment $1 per barrel of Indonesian oil that was pumped, the light sweet crude, plus also agreements that the oil would be sold in California. As there was a huge boom going on with the automobile industry at the time, and that oil was going to be sold and used to power that boom. But Edmund G. Brown, we believe, was the adopted father of Adolf Hitler's son. And Adolf Hitler's son, now this is, we don't have 100% of the proof behind this. We have our archival information, we have pictures, we have things like that that we've compared with, and we've had some witnesses that at times have come forward, but. That Jerry Brown is actually Adolf Hitler's son. He was born on April 18th, 1990 or 1938, and of course April 20th is Adolf Hitler's birthday, which everybody seems to celebrate on 420. That's what happens. That a lot of things happen, But they adopted him, and Jerry Brown came to live in the Bay Area as a young infant with the Brown family, Edmund G. Brown's family. And he became the ultimate Jesuit, as you know. And then ultimately he became the governor of California, not just for 8 years, but he also managed to finagle his way as part of the plan of taking over California back into the governorship by 2010. And that was a big deal, because I could not understand how Jerry Brown had violated the so-called quote Constitution of California. This is when things really started taking off for statehood for me, because I could not understand how he was anywhere near what the Constitution was saying, which was you can only have 2 terms. And then I didn't realize at that point in time the Constitution was not a constitution; it was a corporate document. So, but they passed a law in 19. They passed a proposition, Proposition 1, which was about term limits, and it's stated term limits for assembly members and senators and stuff, because they had, term limit problems. They had too many people dead weight hanging in and all that stuff. And you get into the Willie Brown stories, but in the case of term limits for Jerry Brown, no one would tell me at the time, because I was trying to find out he was going to run for governor in 2010. I'm going, well, what gives him the authority to do that? You can't. The Constitution says you can't do it. Top lobbyist in Sacramento would not answer me. They just wouldn't answer me. I mean, I thought that was so weird.
Well, they knew. They didn't have an answer.
No,
Paul
no, no, no,
was.
Dave, they had an answer. No, they had an answer. But I knew from what I was getting from these folks, I had to dig more. And finally, one of the guys came up and said, take a look at the language of Prop 1 that was passed in 1990, because they were tired of me bugging them, right? Silence was the word. So I go and take a look at the language of Prop 1, and it says that the governor of California can have 2 terms, either consecutively or different times, but that's it. Can't have any more. And this applies to governors that are elected after November 1990. Well, Jerry Brown finished his first term in with the early 1980s. He's the only one that could possibly be eligible in the night after the 1990s.
I got it.
And so he was eligible, and that's how he got it. I
Paul.
had to, you wouldn't believe the work I had to go through to find that little clause.
Yeah, I hear you. But we're out of time, and I feel like we've just scratched the surface. We've got to do a part two.
Oh
There's some,
yeah.
I know there's much more you're dying to tell, and I got so many darn questions here. I'm gonna write down questions as you're talking, and I got 8 questions here that aren't answered yet. We got to do this again. Don't you agree, ladies and gentlemen? The collective audience shakes their head yes. Paul, tell people how to follow your really good show, Agenda 21 Radio.
You can go to the website 821r.com, 821r.com. The show is on Red State Talk Radio every morning from 6 to 9. We're also on Rumble and all the other video channels, except for we're not, listen, believe it but not, and I probably answered my own question to this. We're not on YouTube, really. And we're not on Facebook, really, though they took us down. We are forbidden to be on YouTube.
Yeah, I
Forbidden.
hear you. That's because, yeah, I won't comment. People draw their own conclusion. Also, too, how do you find New California's website?
New California State, newcaliafornia.com. We also have opened up a Doge website, because we're working with the FBI and also the Attorney General Pam Bondi.
I love it.
You can go to ncsdoge.com, ncsdoge.com. If you have a Doge complaint, it doesn't matter if it's anywhere in the country. You can fill out the complaint form. We'll consider it and pass it on to the proper people in the federal government.
Hear you. That's great. Our guest has been Paul Preston, and you could see why I want him on. Storehouse of knowledge, and we barely scratched the surface. Hey, New California is going to be the 51st state. You can write that down.
That's right.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. God bless all of you. Paul, thanks for being with us, and we'll schedule a part two.
Thanks, Dave.